If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. It's me, Jody, and I am back this week with recaps of 90 Day Fiancé and TLC's Unexpected. Now, normally I would have Teen Mom 2 and Married at First Sight on this week's lineup, but you know, it's one of those crazy weeks, and I have two kids about to go back to school, and I don't want them to turn out like any of the Teen Moms or, you know what, probably 99% of the people on any of these shows, so I gotta just dive into motherhood this week. I will be live tweeting and hopping in the Facebook group during some of our live discussions. You guys are so good at getting those live threads going. I wish I could jump in the middle of them, but I'm always like super focused on TV, taking my notes. So I will jump in there. I'll probably talk about 90 Day Fiancé, or no, not 90 Day Fiancé. Oh, it's been a long weekend, guys. I'll talk about Teen Mom 2 and Married at First Sight on Patreon as well as Real Housewives of New York. Check that out, patreon.com/realitytvpod. And check out our Facebook group, Twitter, and Instagram. Just search Reality TV Pod and it'll lead you right there. Now, let's get into 90 Day Fiancé because we have a lot to talk about, starting with our girl, Angela. Now, Angela has had quite a fall from grace this week. You know, not that she was ever Mother Teresa or had much grace at all, but this clip of her on Maury Povich came out. And it's, well, I'd love to give you a synopsis, but my eardrums and I couldn't even take it. I was getting a migraine watching it. Scotty's on there. There's some sort of paternity thing. Scotty's on dialysis. Couldn't really understand what the whole argument was because, number one, no one sits down. Everyone's standing up screaming at each other. I'm pretty sure the topic of the show at the bottom chyron of the screen was, yeah, I've had 22 paternity tests. So, Angela comes out and she does the same thing. Just the standard Maury Povich show repertoire, which is coming out, yelling at the audience, pointing, saying things like, I pay my bills. I pay my bills. You don't know me. You don't know me. So, and. Yeah, there was some sort of that. And then at one point, maybe one of Scotty's baby daddies comes out and then just starts like kissing her in this weird, gross way. Someone probably ran off screen and, you know, dumped a chair over and ripped something off the wall like Brianna did on Teen Mom 2 last week. But anyway, yeah, Angela, she's pretty much a beast. So is Scotty, but you know what? If I didn't know any better and I were just watching these shows, I think these ladies would just have been a little breath of fresh air. I mean, Angela even comes out the front door first scene saying, Mom, I'm gonna be right back. I gotta see what the hell going on. Oh, there she is. See, that's the Angela that I enjoy. Now, here's the real problem, and it is a big one. She doesn't have her passport, and guess what? You need your passport to, you know, fly to Nigeria. So she heads over to the post office. And not only does the post office not have it in time for her flight that evening, the airport's 2 hours away, and she's supposed to be checking in. Not only do they not have it, they don't even know where it's at. She even had to be the one that suggested, like, maybe you lost it. And the guy's like, it's just a mess. So needless to say, she's not going. She calls up Michael, and you know, for two people saying that they're soulmates, they're meant to be together, they love each other, the dude didn't really seem that upset. He wasn't that all shooken up, right? Well, maybe Scotty will have some things to say to Angela to make her feel better. So Scotty comes over, sits down, Angela's packing the bag, and she's got all this stuff that she's going to bring to Nigeria. Now, I know a Russell Athletic when I see it. Pretty sure that is a Meijer or a Walmart brand. Maybe there's some and one in there. And she's packing, and she asks Scotty what she thinks Michael will think of the shirts. And Scotty says, and I quote, "I ain't mega." Yeah, let me say that again. "I ain't mega." Yeah, I think that's supposed to be either "I haven't met the guy" or "I ain't met Michael." I'll say it again. "I ain't mega." Anyone, Bueller. Scotty doesn't give a shit. She's starting to think, you know, okay, not only are you spending all this money on a ring, flying there, now you're outfitting him and his entire family. And yes, it is his entire family, because guess what? She has purchased an authentic Hermes bag. I mean, Heather Dubrow is just probably shitting her pants right now, because how in the world is she going to get her hands on this designer? Yeah, okay, obviously I'm kidding. Did you see the freaking purse? Now, there is some craftsmanship in it, because, you know, the Lord's Prayer doesn't just magically appear on that denim and flossed metallic fabric that's made its way onto that faux pleather handle. I don't even know what it was. I need to go back and take a screenshot, because it just, it was a lot. I mean, I guess if maybe Michael's mom like has some memory issues or some dementia and she's a religious woman, it really would come in handy. Like, oh, how does the Our Father go? Oh, that's right. Our Father who art in heaven. Maybe. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe instead of a purse with a prayer, like a nice golden cross, right? Sterling silver, gold plated, maybe a bangle bracelet. But the purse, what else? Oh, let's get to something else that was a lot. And that was Angela's look at the airport. She was going for like full on Pocahontas. She had the fringed boots, the fringed purse. I didn't see the Lord's Prayer on that one. Maybe it was like a Hail Mary underneath the layer of fringe or something. And she also had a scrunchie on her wrist. Yes, she did. I didn't see it. And honestly, I was kind of disappointed in myself, because I'm actually like known for, okay, you know how like I can spot people who carry the little person gene? I can also spot people who still wear scrunchies. Now, hold on a second. If you're like, oh shit, Jody, what are you talking about? Like, I wear a scrunchie. They're not that bad. I'm not talking a hair tie. I'm not talking, you know, maybe you have like an elastic that has a little covering or something on it. I'm talking about the scrunchies that, you know, the scrunchies of yore, where it was like almost a waffly fabric. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. That is the same one that Angela had. And Angela had a cream colored one. I'm sure when she purchased it, she was like, oh, you know what? I'm going to get that cream scrunchie, because duh, it matches with anything. It's going to go with any outfit. But after a while, it gets kind of like grummy and grimy. Is grummy a word? Well, it is now. Okay. It's grummy. It's grimy. It's dirty because her hair is dirty. Ugh. Anyway, yeah, she's got the scrunchie. And you know what else I saw? Scotty's got a sexy little bra on. I think she took a little drive over to Molly's bra shop and hooked herself up before this show went on. You know, she's trying to like get in good with the locals, get in good with the veterans. She doesn't want to be like the newbie coming in. Well, it's time for Mama Angela and her scrunchie to fly on out to Nigeria. And there she goes and boards. I've never been more jealous of anyone to be on a cross transatlantic flight than I was at that moment, because I would give, well, a lot of money to sit next to Angela on that flight. I mean, can you imagine the stories that woman has to tell? She's been on Maury. She's on a show right now about having a 90-day fiance in frickin' Nigeria. And now she's sitting next to you on a flight in a shirt that says something like, "Take my selfie," or "Here's my selfie," or some shit. I mean, the woman is just She's a walking gift. She really is. All right, so while she's on the plane, let's get to meet Michael. Finally. Michael is 30 years old. He says he's some sort of like an online car dealer. Sounds quite fishy. And he also shows us where he lives in his house with his mom and his siblings. I mean, if that does not humble all of us, well, we're just as horrible as people who watch this show are. And he also has a table that instantly made the hair on my neck stand up, and that would be a photo of his business mentor. Okay, we're just going to keep politics out of this. He has a framed photo of Donald Trump. I'm just going to leave it at that before I get some more like hate reviews. Now, in Nigeria, you know it's coming. They're taught to respect their elders, and Michael thinks of Angela as his elder and therefore really respects her. Well, what is there more to say? I mean, he made the joke himself. You couldn't even write that. Elder Angela. She could be in a polygamous cult. It fits perfectly. And actually, maybe she fits in perfectly with a polygamous cult. Wait, let me rephrase that. Not all polygamists are in a cult. You know I love the sister wives, okay? If you want to have multiple wives, multiple husbands, I don't really give a shit. I'm talking FLDS, you know, the big love, the Elder Angela, Elder Mose, or whatever the hell their names are. Okay, so Michael is washing his car, and in come his friends down the street. This becomes one of my favorite 90 Day Fiancé scenes ever, because it was just perfection. They are voices of reason, all three of them, and they start asking him questions about Angela. Sounds like he hasn't talked about her too much. I don't think all three of them would just happen to be that great of actors. I really don't think they know anything about this, because I really don't think Michael knows anything about Angela. So they're asking him like, okay, so you're having this American woman show up. And then he tells them about her age. And they're just razzing him, saying like, okay, so she's like your grandma. And he's like, oh, no. She's my elder, right? And then they're like, okay, well, not only is she older, but she's an American woman. You know that they are stubborn and bossy. Well, call me crazy, but I kind of take that as a compliment. Call me stubborn and bossy all you want, because you know what? This stubborn, bossy bitch, she gets a donut when she wants a donut. And you know what? This morning I got a donut, a vanilla Long John one. So boom, what you gonna say about that? Atop that. Yeah, I'm talking teen witch style. You guys, I'm all over the board, maybe because it's 11:25 at night and I'm not used to recording at night, but I'm going there. Okay, so Angela, much like myself, I am sure she can get down with the vanilla Long John just like I can. She is what Michael calls a boss lady. Well, boss lady is going to be pretty ticked off when she finds out you've just been calling her an elder and an old person on TV. Do we know if they're still together? I haven't read any spoilers about them. I almost don't want to know about this one yet. Now, okay, let's fast forward, because we know he's in love with a grandma. We'll see what happens next week. And let's get to John and Rachel. Now, this couple, yeah, there are spoilers and I read them. I will tell you them after we go through what happened this week, just in case you don't want to hear it. Okay, so now this week, Rachel says right off the bat, she's never met John in person. She says that very loud and clear. She has her 8-month-old Lucy with her, and she's on her way to go meet John. She can't wait to meet him, wrap her arms around him, because she has never seen him in person. Or has she? Hang on to that for later. All right, so she gets to the airport. She gets this text from John that says, oh, can't pick you up. You need to take the train to Paddington Station. Now, this is where not even the cynic in me, but just the logistics of it, I was like, I don't think that was a surprise. I think she was going to take the train and she knew it, but it would be like a good little plot twist. It just seems like it would be logistically unrealistic, because John knows that there's a camera crew following her, and that would mean a change in logistics for them. You with me there? Well, anyway, she does. She takes the train to Paddington Station. I gotta tell you, the train looked absolutely lovely. I wouldn't even have minded that train ride. Her baby seems like a very easy baby. The baby was holding her own frickin' bottle. My kids, neither one of mine ever held the bottle. That would have been fantastic. But she's just like, oh yeah, hey, little Lucy, hey, you want a bottle? Like, hold my cell phone for me while I go to the bathroom. She's just the easiest baby ever. But even with this easy baby, Rachel's pooped. She's only had two. Well, she hasn't. I wonder if she has pooped. I mean, how would you poop, actually, with a newborn on a plane? How do you do that? Oh my God. She must have been really stopped up. That's going to be awkward. First meeting, in quotes, first meeting. Okay, well, anyway, I meant she's pooped. She's tired. She's only had 2 hours of sleep. Nevertheless, her hair did not look greasy. A little stringy, but not greasy. So she gets to the train station. She's looking around. Where is he? Where is he? Is he going to come? How am I going to get home? I don't have money for a plane ticket. Oh, no. Again, this is what I'm saying. I think that they had absolutely planned for her to go to the train station. But where's John? We get the screen 24 hours before. Well, we get to meet John and we see where he lives, which is with his mom. However, he set up like a little nursery for Lucy with a crib and all these toys. And his sister was not too pleased. She's a major Debbie Downer. Like, they didn't even need to put the music in because the frown lines on the side of her face were just like, womp, womp. She's annoyed. She doesn't get why John is just jumping in full steam ahead. Well, perhaps it's because... Hold on to that. Okay, I don't want to ruin it for you, those of you who are not reading, you know, Starcasm and all these little, not blind items, just follow-up news reports on them. Okay, so what does John do for a living? Well, he sifts rubbish. Really, I mean, you guys, can we agree that just England does it better? It's way better than like, I pick garbage, I sort garbage. Just call it rubbish, and it sounds just delightful. So he's all goo-goo gaga over Lucy, can't wait to meet the baby, can't wait to see Rachel. So on his last night of freedom before they get there, he decides to go have a pint at the pub. Okay, my English accent isn't that great. Maybe that was even Irish. I don't really know what it was. But he's going to go have a drink at the pub with his friends, with his mates, and they all are just drilling him because Darius, for example, he's wondering what's going to happen if they, you know, just aren't a-clickin'. Again, why can we not just start talking like British people, English people? What's the right way to say it? See, I'm so stupid. I'm a stupid American. I don't even know the right way to say it. But I do know I will be using the word clutched as in, but you never clutched her. I'm going to be using that. I'm going to use it as a synonym for hugged because I think we need to bring it back. We need to bring back a-clickin', rubbage, and clutched. Now, let's get to John not puking on the sidewalk because I can't even talk about it. I'm going to gag. He gets to the station and he and Rachel see each other from across the train station. See, this is exactly what I think they planned it. It was like, ooh, we'll be in Paddington Station. So they see each other. Oh, they run. Oh, they're kissing each other. Oh, kiss, kiss. Oh, it's perfect. They want to like start singing karaoke and taking selfies and shit. I was nearly having a panic attack. You know why? Because that stroller. No one's grabbing onto the stroller. I was terrified that thing was just going to go rolling into the train tracks and no one's going to see anything. I have seen those little subway footage things that come out of New York and wherever they have subways where, you know, the strollers go in there and someone dives over there and saves the stroller. Yeah, I saw that going down. That is how my anxiety manifests itself. But no, these two don't give a shit because they're all lovey-dovey with their stupid clotter ring. Now, here is the news. If you don't want a spoiler, go ahead like a minute. Find the little 15-second thing on your podcast player and jump ahead a couple. Okay. John and Rachel have a marriage certificate in Arizona, I believe, that they are married. Now, there is a lot of talk that Lucy looks like John and that perhaps Rachel went to go see him, or perhaps he came here and something. But there is a lot of talk that he is the biological father, which would make a lot of sense why she sent him, I'm going to hold back my gag reflex, why she sent the umbilical cord, the onesie, and all that kind of stuff. Well, add that all together, and the fact that they're married, and the fact that they had a GoFundMe that was up trying to like fund the two of them to go see each other, what happened with that money. This was before they were on the show. They also have some Instagram page that's like, follow our love journey or some shit like that. So there's a lot of reasons why people really do have a right to be skeptical that they had met before and that he's Lucy's dad and that, that they're married. Now, let's talk about Ricky. Oh, Ricky. Well, he has flown to Colombia to meet Melissa. You know, she's that natural blonde. Well, she's still not responding to his text, but he's like, oh, you know what? She's just a little nervous. That's it. I'm going to stay optimistic. She's going to show up. I don't know where the hell he's staying, but it is disgusting. Did you see the mold in the shower? I sure did. But he doesn't give a shit. Mold be damned. He doesn't care whether, you know, he has a new case of adult onset asthma. He is going to meet the love of his life, bring her back, and she's just going to be Mary frickin' Poppins to his daughter. So he gets his little fanny pack on. He texts her, hey, I'm in the cab. I'm going to meet you at 7 p.m. And in the meantime, he calls his friend. This is the friend who we met before. He's psyching him up, and he really was a sweet guy. He's like, you know what? Don't be nervous. Just be smooth. Don't go in for a handshake. Stand up. Give her a hug. I really thought it was good advice because when you stand up and you come off like really awkward, it's going to make her feel awkward. So I love that he said, give her a hug. Now, his friend knows Ricky, and he senses that he's still nervous despite him giving this advice. So he's like, what is up? And that's when Ricky says, well, you know, she hasn't texted me back at all in the past, whatever it's been, 24 hours. Here's where you see what a good friend he is. Instead of calling him on it like, dude, you are such a freaking idiot. He just says, oh, okay, well, just know I'm always just a phone call away if you need anything. What a freaking good guy. All right, so Ricky gets to the restaurant. He's there with this bouquet of flowers, which you know I hate, but I'm feeling so bad for Ricky, I'm just going to let it pass. He goes and gets a shot. I think that was a really good move. And then he gets this text from Melissa that's like, you know what? I know he said 7, but I'm running late. I'll be there at 7:30. This is when producers take the opportunity to break the fourth wall, which I really like this season. And they're asking him, you know, how do you feel? What do you think you're going to feel like when she gets here? And Ricky, at first, he came off very nervous and he's like, oh gosh, you know, yeah, I'm nervous. But then it's like the longer he waited, the more confident he got. It was really strange. So at 7:39, he says, oh, well, you know what? She's still running late. But, you know, from my experience, women always take long to get ready. You know, that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. But then he says, yeah, and you know, she's probably trying to look all hot as hell for me. Oh God. Ricky, no, Ricky. Then 8:10, almost an hour late, and he's still confident that she's going to come. Then 8:49 p.m., and then finally he says that his energy is starting to go down a little bit. He's starting to get a little pissed, but you can tell he's like, okay, do I go with the I'm pissed route and leave, or do I stay here and be hopeful because I really do want her to show up, even if I don't think she's going to, but I also don't want to look like an idiot. And how do I not look like an idiot? I get pissed and leave. You can see that just that internal struggle that he's having. Now, unfortunately, we get left off there. And Ricky was actually the one guy I wanted to see through this week. Like the one that I was like, oh, I've got to see what this Melissa is all about. But sure enough, they're making us wait. Darcy and Jesse, are you ready to go to this really dark place? Because we're going there. They're getting ready in this hotel room, and I am fairly confident it's the same hotel room that Pedro and Chantel were in because I distinctly remember that modern flower wallpaper when Chantel was laying in bed feeling sorry for herself, convinced that Pedro was the one that started the fight. What that says about the energy of the room, I guess it says don't stay at that hotel. So Darcy is getting changed. She looks really good, okay? She's got weird eyebrows in that one confessional scene, but she looks great. Now Jesse, he thinks he looks great. I think he looks the worst he ever has. probably because I can't stand him and I can't stand his face, but I just don't think he looks that great. He thinks he does, though, because he strips off all of his clothes down to his underwear, but then he's like turning his back as if he's trying to stay modest from the cameras. He's like, oh, Darcy, get the belt, and like, oh, like shudders away when he's changing. Okay, Jesse, I'm pretty sure when you're down to your underwear, what are we going to see? Like, ooh, half your man boob? Oh no, we haven't seen that in every frickin' Instagram photo that you post out there. Now, if you're thinking, Jody, wait a second. Jesse does not like social media. He doesn't like Instagram. He disapproves of it. It's bad for his business, and he thinks Darcy's just so dramatic when she's on it. Yeah, I actually agree with you, and I think that Jesse is a huge frickin' hypocrite. And why? Because he's a narcissist and he cannot take anyone else's point of view because he's also a frickin' sociopath. Let's dive into it. They go to this dinner at Cognac. You know, I wanted to look up the menu, but just didn't have the time today. Sorry. They go and they sit down, and seemingly it seems like it may be an okay meal together, but there is definitely some tension. I think Darcy might have been a little afraid because there was a flickering light bulb behind Jesse's head, might have triggered her, had a little flashback from the, you know, night of 1,000 burning orbs in Amsterdam. Seemingly out of nowhere, we get into this argument that just, it exploded. Darcy says something about wanting to get back to the closeness that she craves for their soulful love. Well, that made me just roll my eyes because I'm like, okay, your soulful love, it's so unique, right? You're like every couple when they're falling in love and they think, no one has ever felt love the way that we're feeling love. No one's been in love like this before. But this time they're calling it soulful love because it sounds good on Instagram. Well, then Darcy says, we have to fight for our love. We have to fight for our love that I feel. All this other crap doesn't matter. Well, at that word crap, Jesse just spits right back in her face and says, but a lot of the crap you created yourself. And then he says to us in his, I don't even want to call it testimonial. It's just like these crazy psychopathic rants. He says, she stated on Facebook, that was a shitstorm. You can imagine. People think, oh, Jesse, is he a cheater? This is my business, my life. I am a trainer. When she speaks on social media platforms like that, I lose business. First of all, when do you have time to be a personal trainer between all these photo shoots? And second of all, slow your roll. No one takes you that seriously. And honestly, think about it. Let's say you had a personal trainer and the personal trainer was modeling or on a TV show. Would you be like, oh no, I'm not going to have him as my trainer anymore? Hell no, it would be like just the opposite for me. I'd be like, oh man, like I'm going to get into the best shape of my freaking life because I want to know everything. Tell me everything. No, Jesse, you're losing business because you're opening your mouth and people hear how fucking crazy you are. Now then, Darcy storms off and she goes outside. The next part to me, I was feeling bad for her until this next part when the producer broke the fourth wall and says, so are you going to go back in there? Do you want to go back in? And Darcy's like, yeah. I'm like, oh God. Okay. Well, now you're just asking for it. All right. So she goes in, she puts the key down for the hotel room in front of him. And she's like, I'm sorry. Like, Darcy, what the fuck are you doing? Why are you apologizing? It's almost like she loves the cycle of this, just like Jesse does. So she says, I'm sorry. And then Jesse looks at her and he goes, that's all you're going to say? Own it. And then we move forward. I love you and I want to be able to say, hey, I fucked up because I stand for my integrity. I love you, okay? His mind fuckery is so, it's like, it really is sick and twisted because she did say sorry. Like, what more can she say? And he says, well, that's all you're going to say. Own it. Well, how is someone supposed to prove to you that they are owning their apology? And then he says, well, if you own it, then we can move forward. Well, if she can't do anything tangible to prove to you that she has owned it, how are you going to move forward? And then to quickly be like, I would say that I would own it and that I fucked up because I stand for my integrity, which insinuates that she doesn't. And then he ends it with, I love you, okay? which is like a, he's saying it to exude like he is the person on top. I love you, and I am the dominant one in this relationship. God, I feel like I'm just as confused as Darcy is now. So anyway, they just agree that they're just going to make up, and that's messed up. You know, we all know those couples that it's not even like the Bickersons. It's just they love that makeup part. Like they fight just so they can make up. Yeah, I've never been in a relationship like that. We are not that way in my relationship and my marriage where it's like, oh, yeah, we fight just to make up and the makeup is great. Like, no, that's not real life, people. It doesn't happen like that. So for Darcy to think whatever happens after a fight, it's this deep, profound love. No, no, no. It's just a dysfunctional relationship. Scenes for next week, hey, it may get really dicey there because Jesse is going to meet Darcy's daughters, and he thinks that it's going to be a delusion to think I will become a farter. Yeah, you heard me right. He says farter. Moving on to Paul and Karini. Paul is very excited but very nervous to see Karini. He's flying down to see her. He's going to be staying there for a couple months, but this time he's brought something along. No, not his penis sheath, his criminal record. Karini's father wants to see what exactly Paul has been, you know, convicted of, accused of, the norm. And Karini just wants her stuffed animals. Upon arriving at the airport, Karini is wearing, I think they're possibly limited to jean shorts with the button fly. I remember those from the 90s. Maybe they're back in style. Well, she's also wearing a layered look, kind of maybe like a footless tight situation, knitted kind of thing under the jean shorts. I think it's a very daring, maybe a risky choice in a tropical climate. I don't know a lot of women who would choose to wear such a thing. I'll just say, probably most gynecologists wouldn't recommend it. I'll leave it there. Now, Paul arrives in what I call Best Buy formal. The pleated khakis, the buttoned-up shirt with a tie, but it's not quite the button-up dress shirt that's supposed to go with a tie. He doesn't even know how to tie a tie. Yeah, he's just sweating bullets. And why, of course? Well, it's because his five bags, the tubs, the lockers, everything that he was so terrified of packing, it didn't make the flight. Oh man, this guy just has the worst of luck, and we just have the best of luck that he was casted on the show because it is the best TV watching. Well, he didn't freak out as much as I thought he would. I have a feeling that we didn't see some footage because he must have gone and reported it lost or missing or whatever. The next thing we see is Paul scooting himself out of the terminal. And I say scooting because he has the cart in front of him with nothing on it. Paul, are you really that tired? You can't maintain your normal body posture without leaning on something that's rolling you forward. So he pushes this cart forward and Karini is standing smack dab in the middle. I mean, you can't miss her. And you can't miss her because there's a freaking camera crew pointed at her. But Paul does. He takes his little left and she runs down to go meet him. And what does he do? He turns and he looks at her and he just goes, oh my God, hey, like you're running into a friend at the grocery store or a coworker in the bathroom. I mean, his reaction was underwhelming to say the least. So he hugs her and then he tells us what we were all waiting to hear, but we didn't know we were waiting to hear it. And he said, oh, it just felt so good to hug her and smell her and smell her hair. Hair. Did the hair on the back of your neck stand up? Because I know mine did. I mean, I have to think there was some kinky shit going on. Maybe when his mom said that she found toys for Karini, it wasn't really secret toys like Paul said. Maybe it was just like a flat iron or like one of those crazy braider things that used to be on the infomercials when we were like 10 and 12. Remember that thing would like spin your hair and do these little things? I mean, something is really crazy with the hair obsession in that family. I wouldn't put him past them. But let's fast forward because Paul is super nervous, not only because they lost his luggage, but, you know, Karini doesn't wear a seatbelt. He doesn't want her to die. I'm starting to feel like I know what people in my life feel like when they're around me. I got to take it down a notch. I got to up my Effexor prescription or something, because if I come across anything like Paul, someone just like shoot a tranquilizer dart in me. Well, let's get to this hotel in, I think it's Manaus is how you pronounce it. I did a little digging in the short time I had. Okay, it's a nice hotel. For sure, they're in a different country, but the way that Paul talks about it makes it sound like he was spending hundreds upon thousands of dollars to stay at this really nice hotel, and then they were going to be moving to that apartment. Well, I looked it up to see which hotel they were staying at, and it looks like it could be a couple different options because, quite frankly, they all look almost identical, save for a couple of the bedspread little throw pillow things. Let me tell you, if you are looking for a cheap vacation, head down to Brazil, because these nicer hotels, which I think where he's staying is fairly nice, they go for like $35. The most expensive one I saw was like $63 a night. So, okay, I get it. $63 times you're staying there for 3 months. Of course, it's a lot of money. But he made it sound like they were staying at the fucking Ritz, like it was $500 a night or something. And really, she deserves to stay at a place that is $500 a night, especially when the guy that she's going to have to sleep with says cool beans when he pulls up. Cool beans. Well, I mean, we got to do better, people. Cool beans is very Kelly Clarkson, circa the American Idol era. We've got to move on from this. Or perhaps that starts being incorporated into like abstinence programs or how to promote birth control. Just teach your teen boys, just say cool beans and it's going to turn any girl off. I don't know if that was like a bad thing to say. All I'm trying to say is that let's just retire cool beans. It's not cute, especially when Paul says it. Okay, well, they get to the room, looks decent, and then, oh, that silly Karini. She's got such a good sense of humor. She sets up a mosquito blanket for him to sleep under. She's got all kinds of stomach remedies, Pepto-Bismol. I think there was some Sudafed. And then all of a sudden, tap, 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 tap. Yeah, they got the translator app, except this time, Paul has sprung for a little expensive version where they can talk to each other face to face. Well, yeah, not really, because Paul hasn't learned Portuguese. It's just that this translator app is some strange woman computer voice talking. It was weird. It almost was more weird to me than them writing it and then reading it. It just, I feel like there was like a third person. What is that movie? Oh, You're All Screaming at Me, where the computer. Okay, yeah, you know what I'm talking about. I'm going to look it up and then I'm going to feel like an idiot and you're all screaming at me. But yes, you know what I'm saying. Okay, well, what does Karini get Paul but cologne? And he is such a fucking idiot that he's like, why don't you get me that? That's going to make the mosquitoes come around more. Oh, silly Karini, you dumb. No, Paul. She got you fucking cologne because you freaking smell. Remember when you wore the same thing every fucking day, that mesh jacket? You stink. You smell. She doesn't want to smell your armpit. She doesn't want to smell your armpit hair. You probably think it's sexy because it's hair, but she just thinks you smell like ass. But he's such a fucking idiot. Well, then they lay down, they go in the tent, and then he does this weird, like, I felt gross watching, and he's like, okay, come here. And then he does this weird kissing thing. Like, she pecked him on the, I feel gross even describing it. It was just, it's very awkward. I can't imagine what it's like when they are together. Later that evening, his luggage is found. It gets delivered. So now it's present time. First up, a poop emoji pillow, followed by there was like a heart-faced one, a smiley-faced one, then some weird unicorn that he kept holding in front of her face, like shaking it like she was a baby or something to stimulate her. And she seemed happy. But the way that Paul says that she enjoys stuffed animals, that it's kind of immature and childlike, she didn't seem all that excited about the stuffed animals like he made it out to seem. I think that he thinks she likes the stuffed animals and she may be giving him like a pity, oh yay, I love it. Because he's the type of guy who would send a grown woman like a teddy bear on Valentine's Day. I'm bound to offend some of you out there, but you know what I'm saying. Most grown women don't want a little stuffed animal holding like a I love you very much as a I love you gift. Now, you know I can't leave out the part where Paul tries to attack the tent. Paul, it's simple. You push the two sides together and you twist. I don't have one of those. I've never had one, but I know it's just like common sense. Like you see a chair, you know how to make your body sit. You see one of those tents, you know that it's that type of metal thing that you put together. You twisted it down into a circle, but no, he's attacking this thing as if it's an intruder in the middle of the night and he's trying to like fight them off to save he and his mother's life. You know, much like he would leave Karini for the attacker. You know, listen, I'm not that mean. It's not that far off. He did scamper up the hill and leave her alone, right? Well, Karini almost pays him back in this episode and scampers off herself deservedly because as they're spending the day together, Paul gets annoyed that Karini is messing around on her phone. So he sits her down and he's like, you know, you've been on your phone a lot. Who are you talking to? And as a matter of fact, I see that you've been making a lot of comments on this Instagram account. It's this fitness guy. I'm sure one of you knows her names. I really don't even care that much, but she is making comments or little flirty messages. Hi, nice picture, little heart emojis, smiley face emojis. Well, Paul suddenly thinks that this means that she's cheating on him. Yeah, Paul, this Instagram fitness model flew himself down to the Amazon, swam down the fucking river with the piranhas and the penis sheaths, much like you, to go and find Karini to sleep with her. I mean, really, it's so ridiculous. This is why I think this is Paul's storyline. He knows exactly how the season's going to go. Karini probably does to a certain extent, or to the extent that the translator app correctly says things. I mean, because it really seemed like what Paul was saying. Like he was like, Karini, I don't like the picture. And then all of a sudden the translator app was like, it was like five times the amount of words than he used. Anyone else catch that? I think maybe the translator app has like intuitive speaking, texting or something. It's like warning her. It's a possibility. I mean, Siri is pretty fucking smart. Okay, so long story short, he thinks that Karini is cheating on him, and he's like, oh, so I want you to take a pregnancy test. This is where this whole freaking storyline, this is gets really annoying because, yeah, she can cheat on you and not be pregnant. Like, those two things aren't necessarily correlated, right? I mean, Paul, we're not that stupid. You're having her take a pregnancy test because, spoiler alert, she's pregnant. All right, let's move on to our last, I'm not going to say couple, our last man, and that is Tarek or Tarek. I'm going to get confused because I know Tarek Salahi from Real Housewives of DC, and then there's that Tarek dude from Flip or Flop with a wife with a crazy voice modulation disorder. But this Tarek, I enjoy. He is 43, he's from Virginia, and he has a daughter, Ariella, who they call Ari, and she's 5. Now, you know I have to mention our sister wives. They also have an Ariella that they call Ari. And this Ariella, I'm going to play favorites. I love her way more than I love the sister wives, Ari. She is high functioning on the autism spectrum. She's absolutely adorable. And you can tell that Tarek and his daughter have a really close bond. It's super sweet to watch that. Now, he never married Ari's mom. They broke up pretty quickly after she was born. In the past few years, Tarek went to Thailand. He thought it was amazing. He figured out that he was attracted to Asian women. He actually had a girlfriend that he found in Bangkok, but didn't work out. I would love to know the background story on that, but we didn't get to hear too much about that woman. But we do know that after he broke up with her, he went on these Asian dating websites and he says he hit the jackpot. He met Hazel, who's 25. She's about a foot shorter than him and she lives in the Philippines. She is the Angelina Jolie of Manila. She's so drop-dead gorgeous that it makes Tarek feel dumb. Well, I already hate her because I really like Tarek. He seems like a great guy. He seems very insincere so far. And I actually really enjoy his brother, probably more than him. Dean is our voice of reason. You knew he was going to be our voice of reason because Tarek explained that he is loud and he knows me better than anyone else knows me. So right off the bat, you're like, oh, this guy is going to bring it. And bring it he does. They go to work out in his basement room or something like that, and he just throws it out there that Hazel is a mail order bride. You can say it's a dating site, but if you're picking which woman on the site and all of these women want to just come over because they want to come to America, this is according to Dean, I'm not saying it's the truth. You know, that's what you're getting into and you got to listen to your gut. You know, think of it. If someone else was saying this, what would you think? I have to admit that I thought Dean was coming down pretty hard on Tarek. Again, I have this little soft spot for him. I don't know why. But when Tarek himself started admitting that Hazel still keeps in contact with her exes, she keeps her clothes at her exes' houses, it's like, well, what more do you need to know that she's not serious about you? Would you put up with that shit with someone who was dating you who lived a half mile down the road? Probably not. So why is it okay if it's someone across the world that you've never even seen face to face? Well, at least we can have a little solace knowing that Dean is going to go with Tarek. Not on the same flight, on the same day, because Tarek wants one day, he said, to like settle in and get to know her better. I think we know what that means. But at least Dean is going to be there the day after to look out for our boy. Now I'm starting to wonder, am I the only one that likes Tarek? I'm calling him my boy. I'll probably, you know, get messages from you guys like, hello, have you seen the guy? He's whatever, like a mass murderer or something. But I like him for now. He says his little goodbyes to Ariella. Very cute. She's going off with her mom for 2 weeks. And then Tarek is home free. He somehow gets into Chelsea from Teen Mom's house, steals all her drapes, makes himself a shirt and a hat out of the black and red checked plaid, whatever the hell material we call that. Not a big fan, but whatever. He looks good in it. And he is off to the Philippines. He gets there and he's got a ring that he's going to use to propose to her. Guess we'll find out how that shakes out next week. After the jump, let's talk about Unexpected on TLC. This show, Unexpected, it sucks me in every week. This is one of those shows where I look at the clock and I'm like, wait a second, how is it already 45 minutes in? I thought the show just started. It goes way too quickly. I could really take hour and a half episodes. Now we start off with Max and Chloe. And you know, it's so weird because this show is named Unexpected, but Max expected to be pregnant. You see, he planned it the whole time. Yeah, freaking Max. He's pretty much a monster. Max doesn't understand why Chloe's parents don't like him. You see, they met, they were sneaking out, he was sneaking into their house. But you know, all that is just water under the bridge. Why can't they just forget about it? Move on. Like he said, 10 years down the road, are they going to be disappointed in Chloe and Max? No. Are they now? Yeah. So what? God, Max is such a freaking asshole. And I agree with Chloe's mom. I would be annoyed as all fuck if every time I pulled in my driveway, my daughter's boyfriend was over. I mean, you already got her pregnant. We know as soon as she has that baby, you are going to be around in our lives for the next forever. Can you give us just a couple months break before we're going to have to see your face every day? But no, Max just thinks they're so wound tight. They're such jerks. They're just trying to control him. Now, there's a very weird dynamic going on between Chloe and Max. I was sensing something last week, but I couldn't quite figure out what exactly it is. And I think I got it. Chloe tends to be the kind of the voice of reason, but it's I think she has ulterior motives with it. And let me explain. She's always asking him things like, so are you like cool with having a baby? I mean, wait, so you really want to be like committed together? Are you sure? And I think she's doing that because she likes asking those questions for two reasons. Number one, to look like the cool girl. Like, yeah, I'm totally cool. Like, we don't need to be super tight and whatever. But I think the real reason is that she really does like to hear him say, yeah, I want to be a family together and we're our family and I love you and this is what I wanted all along. I do think she gets defensive of her mom and her dad when he starts being a dick, but I do think it's that little thing inside of you when you're like, oh, do I look fat? No, I'm totally fat. And it's just because you want the person to be like, no, you're not. You are like such a wave. Let's get to the really uncomfortable part. I'm not going to be able to say these words because, you know, I'm a grown 38-year-old woman and I still can't say these things. Max is explaining basically how Chloe got pregnant. He's basically like, well, what I did was I like put my penis inside her and then I did this thing called ejaculated in her vagina and then she got pregnant. Like, he really thinks we are this stupid that we don't know how it happens. He's so stupid that he thinks he sounds smart when he uses big words like ejaculation. I just don't know if I should feel bad for him because he clearly doesn't understand social norms or social cues, or if I should be annoyed with him and hate him because he doesn't get social cues. I did have a wake-up call moment when Chloe was talking about Max thinking that he has a stronger pull-out game than he does, or she said something like, he doesn't want to sound like he has a weak pull-out game, but he does. And it was the way she said it was so flippant, like it was nothing. Like, you know, we all just talk about our boyfriend's pull-out games with our parents. It's crazy to me that kids are just talking openly about this. It doesn't mean it's necessarily bad, but it just means I need to be way more prepared when my kids get to that age. My nieces this weekend were trying to teach me the lingo that all the cool kids are using these days, like, that's bet and shit like that. And I already feel totally clueless, but this, wow, I need to read a book, read up on the interwebs, and have those of you who have teenagers as kids tell me everything you know so I'm prepared. Moving on, let's talk about Max's mom, who was a stripper, and apparently his dad raised him because his mom had him in and out of motel rooms and other places, not a healthy upbringing. This, again, is where it gets really tricky with Max because he's had a hard life coming up. Of course, it's going to affect you. You're going to want a family. You're going to want to cling on to that family unit that you can build yourself, that's unconditional love. But this is where Max's immaturity shows because he doesn't realize with what he's doing with Chloe, trying to pit her against her parents, it goes against everything that he's trying to say that he wants to build between Chloe and his soon-to-be daughter. For example, Chloe is saying, my mom just wants me to be happy, so she's looking out for me. She's not your mom. She's not necessarily going to be looking out for you. Max just takes that as like, yeah, well, she doesn't need to do that anymore because we're our own family. Think about it. Well, she is thinking about it. He's saying, yeah, when our daughter Ava is 15 or 16 years old, she's not going to be getting pregnant. Well, you idiot. Take a second, have some empathy, and think that's exactly what her parents are thinking. We don't want our daughter pregnant, but she is, but we're still going to be her parents because we love her. Max is the type of person that can never admit that he's wrong. And instead, he will just adopt a new story, a new schema in his mind, and try to convince us, and probably convince himself, that it was his plan all along. No, he didn't get Chloe pregnant by accident. That was actually his plan. He wanted to get her pregnant. He's never going to admit, oh yeah, it was an accident. I should have done this or that. He's going to say it was his plan because he can never, ever admit that there is any fault in anything that he's done. Well, what has Moneybags Max done to earn those money bags? Starcasm posted, oh, as well as some other social media outlets. But, you know, Starcasm's always my favorite. I don't know why they just always post so quickly. This is not an ad for them, I swear. They're just great at posting this kind of stuff. Well, they have this whole write-up on Max. I'm just going to sum it up in my own words. Forgive me if I, you know, have dates and things wrong like that. Well, Max had this friend who lived with his grandmother, not Max's grandmother, but the friend. One night, Max shows up and asks the guy for a bottle of water and if he wants to go out or something. The friend was like, no. So Max leaves. And then the next morning, the friend's grandmother wakes up and she's got a credit card missing, money missing, and something else. Well, then they find out that the credit card was used at a McDonald's for like $12 or something, which makes me wonder, like, how much can this guy pack away? Because if I were to spend $12 on food for myself at McDonald's, I would be probably five times my size. But anyway, he bought McDonald's and a mini fridge. Well, then they pull the tape and sure enough, it's Max, down to the tattoo on his chest. Max is then charged and then I think he got out on bail or something like that. And then he tried to give the older woman that he stole it from $300 as opposed to the $974 that he stole or used. And she said no. So then he was arrested because he stole all this shit. He's denying it, but clearly it's him. And you know what? That's probably his 10-year plan. Just keep freaking stealing money. And then blame it on Chloe's parents somehow. Moving on to Lexis and Kelsey. Scarlett, cute little baby. Again, how these teen moms luck out with these little easy babies that just lay there in the chair and sleep. And they're like, oh, she's just going to sleep right through you putting her in the car seat. God, I wish mine were that easy. This is where I started feeling uneasy because Lexis starts praising Shaden, how great he is and how he just loved her pregnant body, loves Scarlett and all this kind of shit. I don't even want to hear it, even if it were true. I think Lexis is totally in this honeymoon phase and forgetting all the bad shit. She wants things to go well with Shaden, so she's painting it that way in her brain. But I remember last season and I'm not falling for it. Well, Shaden has been in jail for probation violation for a couple months, so he hasn't seen Lexis or Scarlett. He's back in the picture, and actually he's back in their living room with Kelsey sitting on the couch having to watch this asshole of a kid who told her off, who said she was a bad mom during last season's reunion, just, you know, comfy as can be in her living room. She had at least feel a little bit better when Lexis looked Shaden right in the eye and goes, oh, your acne's coming back. I mean, if Shaden didn't hate Lexis before she cheated on him, that would have done it. Who the hell looks at someone and says, oh, your acne's coming back? That is so freaking hurtful. Unbelievable. Well, Shaden and Lexis, they're getting back together, right? Shaden doesn't believe that Lexis was bisexual to begin with, that she never had a good thing to say about a vagina. I mean, you guys know how us ladies are when we get together and we just like talk all positive things about each other's vaginas, but not Lexis. No, she has been negativo about vaginas. So for sure, she's not bisexual. Shit, for years people have been talking about gaydar in here. Shaden knew what the formula was all along. Damn, what a brilliant, brilliant man. Perhaps this is why Lexis gets back together with Shaden. They're going to have their happy little family. She's going to apologize over and over and over again, which is going to feed his ego, which is going to make him nice for the time being. And they're all happy as can be, except for Kelsey. She's got to see this shit in her own home, and I cannot wait for her to put her foot down because you know what? She should not have to deal with that shit under her own roof. I'm with her. You know what? If you want to go and be with him, then go be with him somewhere else, but not in my house. Look at how like tough I can be when I'm not in this situation. Let's talk about Emily and Diego. Oh, as my girl Melissa from Moms and Murder said before, go Diego, go. No, like really go. He is the worst. He's like the Shaden of the season. We meet Emily's Nana. She's only 59 years old. Ooh, think about that. And her Nana got pregnant when she was 15, had her mom when she was, 2 weeks before she turned 16. Now, she doesn't think Emily is as strong-willed and as stubborn as herself and her daughter, Bridget. Bridget is Emily's mom. I totally agree. Emily is very quiet. Her grandma and her mom are very strong, outspoken, and they don't like Diego for her. None of us do. But Emily wants to give him a chance because she wants her daughter to have a father. I totally get her feelings. And her mom felt the same way. Her mom left or divorced her father when she was 4 years old, and she thought that that would break the cycle. But now even her mom is feeling guilty, like maybe that was not early enough because Emily went and did the exact same thing, finding a guy that was just going to leave just like her dad did. So hard to see her mom feeling that guilt. Like I said last week, I think if teens are going to be having sex, they're going to have sex regardless of what their mom says or the guilt that they have. Now, Diego, he says that he chose Emily because he thought she was into athletics and she wouldn't be too clingy, or so he thought. He is such a dick. He's at this baby shower, totally ignoring her, sitting at the table, surrounded by his family. Okay, let's think about that. They're all sitting there enjoying this great meal, and they're supporting him in being a jerk. Emily's mom goes over there and is like, hey, why don't you go open some of the presents? Because, you know, they're for you too. I don't think she was rude. I don't think she was mean about it. But she was like, hey, this party is for both of you. You should get to go open some presents too. But then Diego's mom, you know what? I'm calling her on it because it was ridiculous, her response. I can believe it because, I mean, look at Diego. He's the product of something. But seeing someone so entitled and unapologetic for their behavior, his mom says, well, you know what? Her being, you know, bossy and telling her kid to do something, her daughter, that may work for her, but it's not going to work for my son. Diego has always been like this. If you push him, he's going to push back. That may work for her daughter, but it's not going to work for my son. Well, yeah, you're right. It's not going to work for your son because it's too late. You've raised him this way for however many, 16, 17, 18 years. You've created a monster and you are letting it happen and you're excusing it, which means you are just as bad. You're making the earth full of horrible people. And not only just his parents, but that entire table. Like, no one's going to step up and be like, hey, yeah, maybe you should go over there or mingle, meet some people, say hello. They're all guilty. Even when he's opening the gifts, he's like, oh, wow, thanks for the diapers that we already got. Yeah, like the baby's going to be wearing those same fucking diapers for a year, you stupid piece of shit. And then he opens up the last one and he's like, oh, thanks for coming, whatever, I'm out of here, bye. I'd be very happy not to see this kid's face again, except for the fact that I know it would break Emily's heart, so I suppose I'll allow it. Now let's talk about Michaela before we wrap up the show. Oh boy, I think this is going to get really, really dark and really bad. Man, that Shannon, Michaela's mom, let's just get right to it. So we know that they're going to be moving in together. They go and they look at this house and it is, I don't want to sound snobby or snotty, but it is not a place that I would want to be moving into with Shannon, obviously, but not my child. It didn't look clean necessarily. And then Shannon brings Michaela down into the basement and is like, oh, this will be your space. You know, you can fix it up. And when Kaylin comes over here, you can make it your own space. You know, I'll be upstairs and everything, but this basement can be your space. Well, I was already pissed off at that. Like, it looked like a normal Midwestern, I forgot where they live. You know, it looked like an old basement. Definitely not a place that I don't think anyone wants their child crawling around in. There could be mold down there, mildew. It looked really dingy. If it was so great, why didn't Shannon get her freaking ass down there and be like, ooh, I get dibs on the basement? No, because she knows she can manipulate Michaela. But we know it gets worse. Michaela helped to pay the deposit and the first and last month's rent and, you know, all that stuff because, as Shannon said, she doesn't have all that money just sitting there to give. Oh, so it's okay for Michaela just to fork over all that money, but oh, God forbid you have it because that's just asking too much. I would never, even if I was in a position where I had no money, I would not be going to either one of my children saying, yeah, come live with me because then you can pay, as she says later, you know, you can help out with utilities, bills, you know, stuff like that. And what's Shannon going to do in return? Oh, she's going to make sure that the babies have diapers and formula. Well, I don't know for sure, but I'm just going to take a little gander and see, why would it be diapers and formula? Would that be because you can get that on like the WIC program or you're getting food stamps or certain government assistance to get formula and diapers? Again, I don't know. This is just my thought process. I just think, you know what? If you can't afford something, then don't do it. She's only doing it because she knows she can manipulate Michaela. And not only is she getting better housing or housing that she needs, she also gets to do two other things. Isolate Michaela from her parents and kind of stick it to her parents that way because she has a strained relationship with them. And what better way to break your parents' heart than steal your kid back from them? And she gets to be the little middleman or be part of the relationship between Michaela and Kaylin. She can say whatever she wants to say and just stir shit up. I loved that Kaylin, we didn't really get to hear too much from him, but from what we did see, I love that he was like, yeah, I'm not going to hold back. And he's like, get off your ass, go and get a job. She's talking shit about him like, oh, he's living rent-free at my parents and blah, blah, blah. Oh, bitter much, jealous much. Yeah, you sound real mature. You sound just like a mother. And you know what? Didn't seem like Shannon had a problem when Michaela, her daughter, was staying with her parents or when Michaela was getting help from Kaylin's mom. Ugh. Look, I'm losing my voice because I'm getting so freaking pissed off. Well, hopefully you are not pissed off with me because I'm leaving you high and dry here. No Teen Mom 2 or Married at First Sight for now. But remember, check Twitter and the Facebook group. We'll have some live threads going, live tweeting going. I'll talk about it on Patreon this week. So if you are a member on Patreon, you can hear it all there. I will leave you here before my voice leaves me. And I will see you guys next week. Stay salty.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.